just realized I was muted on one of my lines, you guys.
We've got a great show for you. Needless to say, hit that like button, and we'll be right back after this.
Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. Citibank warned the soft landing dream is over. The U.S. economy is headed for a recession in the middle of 2024. Morgan Stanley warns a U.S. dollar regime shift could threaten stocks. And meanwhile, the Fed's most trusted recession indicator is flashing code red, because every recession since 1945 has been preceded by a yield curve inversion. Meanwhile, the M2 money supply is meaningfully contracting for only the fifth time since 1870. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no fee for life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I am joined by one Warren Smith of the Secret Scholar Society. You guys may have seen Warren a couple of months ago or in their intervening months. He came to prominence because he had posted on his YouTube channel a really interesting and thought-provoking discussion with a student about J.K. Rowling and whether or not she was a bigot and a transphobe. And I thought it was awesome. And so I reached out to Warren and wanted to see if we could get him here on the show and talk about his use of the Socratic method. Warren, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I take it that you did not plan to take this path in life. I mean, you didn't set out to be a YouTuber. You didn't set out to be someone with an audience in this way. You were a professor and a filmmaker. So how has this transition been for you?
Well, it's been entertaining. It's been fun, exciting. And yeah, I never expected this, though. Definitely never thought I'd be doing YouTube in any serious manner or getting to speak to people like you, but it's really cool. I love talking to people, so it's been enjoyable.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, let me actually start off here by playing that clip from your J.K. Rowling video, because I want to make sure that people understand what it is you do. So let me just bounce over to this view, and here you go, guys.
So these guys want to talk about J.K. Rowling? So what's going on with that? What do you want to know?
She's had a pretty controversial past. I just want to know, like, what are your thoughts on it? And, like, do you still like her work despite her bigoted opinions?
So let's get specific, though. Let's define bigoted opinions. What opinions are bigoted? We're going to treat this as a thought experiment. I'm not going to say what's right or wrong or what way to think. The whole point is to learn how to think, not what to think.
Yeah.
So when you say bigot, you're
so bigoted opinions of J.K. Rowling. What I love with this conversation, Warren, and I see this in your videos, is that rather than telling someone how to think or what to think, you lead them through the process of how to actually go about thinking for themselves. And as I was saying in the introduction when I was muted, this is a method that is seems to have fallen out of favor. You don't really hear this very often, and you hear more complaints about educators being ideologically driven and essentially telling their students what they should think. Do you feel in your field that you stand alone, or is there a larger space for this than people perhaps are able to perceptualize?
Well, I can only speak for what I see directly. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. There's a lot of classrooms that I don't know what goes on in there. So, I mean, I think there are some people, well, when it happened, a lot of my colleagues were like, oh, yeah, we do this all the time. Like, I don't understand why this And honestly, I was surprised as well, and it didn't seem like it warranted a reaction either. But I think it's there are a lot of topics that are not touched upon. A lot of people are afraid to discuss them at the college level as well. You know, I've had a lot of, when I was a student, you know, I have a lot of experiences I remember where conversations were shut down and you would be, you know, not formally blacklisted or anything, but definitely shunned by your classmates in graduate school. And that could be detrimental.
So, yeah, it certainly can be. I mean, obviously, you need to be having these types of conversations. Otherwise, people shut down or they just kind of enter a one-way street. What's the reaction from the students? Because I think that also well, first of all, let me say I'm a father of a 23-year-old daughter, and I've seen her kind of grow up and mature and gone through these various phases, certainly phases where she was very ideologically driven. And as she's gotten older, she's perhaps, you know, started to think about things in a very different way. But do your students resonate with this, or is it something that they push back against? Because I think also a lot of people look at today's younger generation and they just expect them to be driven to the left, essentially, because that's what a large portion of their peer base is pushing them towards.
I noticed that the students seem to – something kind of lights up in their eyes. They become engaged in a different way than I normally see. And it's almost, I mean, I've had, I remember one student specifically, he asked me about the difference between socialism. He's like, I hear these terms, fascism, socialism. And this was, I teach both high school, I teach full-time high school, and I teach classes at Emerson College. I'm not tenured or anything, but I teach a few classes there. It's especially the high school students seem to want to have these conversations, whether I was teaching a journalism class and I had a female student who is wanting to write an article about trans athletes because she had had a teammate injured, two teammates injured by the same player who is a biological male playing field hockey, and not a single teacher would offer a comment or assist in the article. So, you know, I've been experimenting with it a bit more since this happened, trying to, it's a shame I can't film as much as I would like in the classroom now. But when I do, it's when I do just have these conversations, even if it's not with a camera around. Yeah, I definitely notice, you know, you might have six students in there, or it's really fun too. And when there's another teacher present and they're willing to have an honest, objective conversation, whether it's teachers unions, what do you think about teachers unions? And suddenly the students are in these like roller chairs and they spin around and they're just watching like silent. And they're, if there's something interesting there.
So yeah. do you notice any difference between high school students and college students?
I do. Yeah. College students can be tough because that's when things really start to ideologically change.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a different environment too. And I've been trying to pinpoint what it is. I mean, because there's, think about it, with high school, you have parents who, if it gets bad enough, they will push back. Some parents.
Right.
They have, at least some parents have the ability to try. So we saw with COVID, once we had distance learning, they started to notice what was being taught. And then they could, if they saw something, they could say something. But with college, you can't do that. And also, I mean, you're, you know, your 18-year-old, 19-year-old goes off to school. They're hundreds of miles away, thousands of miles away. You can't talk to a professor. Professor's going to be like, you know, what, you don't, I don't care what you, there's no dialogue there. And that's fine. I get it. It's a different point in life. But there's no pushback. There's no system of checks and balances within the college. So correct, things can just run rampant. So there's a bit more, at least the public school, they have to strive for objectivity. By law, you know, colleges, there's no system of checks and balances. Now, there's a conversation around how effective that is, and there's still flaws.
Of course.
There's still a lot of problems in public schools. We hear about them all the time. But there's way more concerning as far as ideological conversations. I see that rampant at the college level.
it seems to me also that there's a lot more reinforcement of specific ideologies when you get to college too. And I'm certain that it doesn't help that with the absence of the parental involvement, the only social structure that these kids have are going to be the other kids, and they're all going to be kind of feeding into the exact same stuff.
Yes. Yeah, it becomes this positive feedback loop. And, you know, there's that, what was that saying, you know, about if you're, it's so easy to, when you're that young, to fall for things like Marxism.
Yeah.
Parts of socialism, you know, because you don't have any real financial responsibility. You don't, as you get older, you start to become more conservative. And there's those jokes about, you know, I forget what his name was talking about when you start reading about World War II in your 30s. Yes. You know, that's like early onset syndrome. For it's true.
It's
like,
totally true. Yeah.
The exact same thing. But anyways,
I love it. No. You're right on. I mean, I remember something about, you know, young men being socialists, and if you're an old man and you're still a socialist, and you're a fool, or something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's about paying taxes, taking care of your kids, you know, having a vested interest in society, and making sure that you have a good place to raise your family. I mean, all those things lend themselves to conservatism. I mean, just because if it's socialism, then you're giving away everything that you have, and you don't have the ability to take care of your family, and you might end up at the bottom of a dirt mass grave in Mao's China or something like that. So
one is about pursuing pleasure and happiness rather than responsibility and meaning through the pursuit of responsibility, and that's more important than your immediate happiness. When you're young and it's like you're out partying, it's the same mindset. You're about the now. You're just young. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, no, we all have, you know, I mean, and you're also looking for other people to take care of you. You know, I mean, you may have left the nest, but you're not necessarily ready to go out and start making all of your own decisions, even if you'd like to pretend that you can. You know, I mean, you still want to have that ability to call mom and dad, and if you can't pay your rent or something like that, you know, call on the state if necessary.
Yeah. And then a suave professor comes along preaching Marxism reform of it, telling you he has all the solutions to all the problems. And you see all classmates looking up to them as well. And then it just, and you're not going to disagree. So there's that interesting YouTube channel. I would really love to do a video about that, reacting to him. And I'm not quite sure, like, I'm starting to have a leaning towards what I feel about him. It's the School of Communications. He's one of the few teachers on YouTube. He'll broadcast his entire class live, and it's in a huge auditorium. He's just like a sociology teacher, as far as I can tell. Sometimes he said things I was like, oh, he gets it. Like Dave Rubin covered him. He's like, this teacher gets it. But then he'll say other things that are just run of the mill. Talking about like racism and there's clear differences. I'm just like, your very premise is flawed.
Is he an older gentleman? Like he's maybe mid-50s or something like that, kind of whitish-grayish hair. I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I've definitely seen a couple of interesting conversations that he's had with people.
Yeah, but he does do some interesting stuff, but he has that charisma as well that I was just thinking about when I was talking about that. And you could see it in all his students, but I give him credit for at least broadcasting live. Yeah. And I give the school credit for allowing him to do it.
So on that note, what was the response from your two institutions when that video went crazy? I mean, what is it sitting at right now? It's almost 1 million views.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's 782,000
on my channel. Yeah, but no one saw it on my channel. you know, like it got on X and everything, it got a lot, but on my channel, it was like at the end of that run, it was like 200,000.
Oh wow,
that's it. Yeah, so no one watched it on my channel.
Well, I went out and found you right away because I was like, there's got to be more videos that this guy's done. So it'd be fun to check out. But yes, I mean, I don't doubt it. Probably all told with everybody who covered the video, I mean, many millions of total views. So it must have brought some attention not only to you, but also to your life and the things in it. How was that?
I haven't heard anything from Emerson. You know, they haven't. Nothing negative. Well, that's not true, actually. Because there was that, I did a ContraPoints video, and then I started Because before there was nothing to attack. It was just like a flash in the pan. I didn't exist really. There was no online presence. There was no.
Right.
And then I did that. And so there was a target place then. And so then there was people on X sending messages and they would tag Emerson over and over and over. And so eventually I did get a response from, I know him, he, you know, the head of, he's like a dean of the graduates under, I don't know, he's someone up in there. And he emailed me and said, hey, our social media team flagged all this activity that indicates you're being spammed. Let us know if there's anything we can do. And I was like, oh, thank you. So that meant a lot. That's the only thing they've said. The other school, I had to, I mean, the day after they were like, what? And I was like, I don't know, man. I didn't, because I didn't post the video. I posted it to my YouTube channel, just my teaching portfolio, but someone else, like I was saying, someone else took it and then brought it over to X where I wasn't even active. And that's where it got seen. And so I didn't even realize that all this was happening until after it had happened. And so that next day I came in, and, you know, and they were just like, what? And then I did Pierce Morgan that night. And then the following day I did the principal's like, I think you're just going to, we'll just arrange a meeting with the head honcho and the lawyers. Like, so this is beyond me. And so I did, I just met with the head business person and her two lawyers, which is very, actually very helpful, very clarifying, because it's nice to have lawyers who can objectively read in the law and be like, well, there was no rules broken here. So it was essentially this, there was no rules broken. So congratulations. Good luck. I hope you don't make a mistake in the future.
We'll be watching.
That's literally what they said. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
I'd hate to see you make a mistake, but as long as you don't reveal the school or the student, you know, so that's all I'll say about that.
Well, good to hear. Good to hear. So, you know, one thing I also really like about you, and, you know, I can have my opinions, you know, attempting to divine what your views are, but you don't ever explicitly state what your political views are. I mean, I think you have really good takes, if that tells the audience anything. But you steer away from that. You know, I'm assuming that's intentional. I mean, do you not want people to know exactly where you stand on which side of the aisle or politically?
I think it just naturally came from, as a teacher in the classroom.
Good.
You don't really, your opinions don't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and they shouldn't. It's, my opinions don't belong in the classroom. It's only what can be derived at through logic and reason. Opinion means nothing. And I also recognize that I'm just another guy with an opinion. No one cares. That doesn't mean anything. There's so many people out there who are just sharing their opinion. That's fine if people want to share their opinions. So I don't really see much value for myself. I don't feel like I can really contribute much value just sharing my opinions. It's only what I can help reason through. Like, so if logic does stand alone, I mean, and that's debatable, but I do think that logic does, and logic can be used as evidence. Like, if you can present the logic, well, that can be evidence, even if you don't have example, like the Elon Musk, Don Lemon debate, even if it has not yet happened, we can derive logically that if it were to happen, if this were to happen, this is how it would have to happen. Logically, there's no other way. So therefore the logic is the evidence. And so, anyways, it's not so much that, no, I just don't think it's that interesting in my opinions.
Well, it's unusual in today's world because pretty much everybody comes down on one side of an issue. I mean, it just, you see it all the time. And I don't want to force you into saying anything specific.
It's fine.
Okay.
I'm having any time. Like, yeah. If there's a, I'd rather go about it like this is how I explain it. If there's a point, an issue, I'm happy to dissect it and try and present the logic. And then based off the logic, what would my conclusion be? That's my opinion, right? That's not like some completely objective. It's just how I try it. I'm happy to go point by point.
Yeah.
I find that more useful than being like, I agree completely with one side or the other, though I do probably resonate more, obviously. I mean, it's just,
yes, yes,
but I'm not going to agree with everything. So I'm happy to go point by point on anything and present. If there's logic there, I'll dissect it.
So if you wouldn't mind, can you explain this, your methods to us? I mean, like, you know, what was it that brought you to think about things like this? Because again, you know, although teachers may do it, I don't quite often see people engaging in this type of dialogue. And the reason I find it so interesting is because I think it's vital to the survival of society. And I feel that the world has become so divided. I mean, we've been pushed into these ideological boxes, and it's gotten to the point where people simply are unable to have these types of conversations. So I'm impressed with it because I don't see enough of it. And I would love it if people started thinking about things logically and not just using emotion to kind of go off the deep end one way or the other.
Yeah, it just aggravates me, I think. For a few years, and it came from talking to people I love, you know, my own family and friends, they would say things that just seemed, I would see a clear contradiction, or I felt like with just a single question, it could crumple.
Can you give me an example, like the plandemic maybe?
Well, I'll just, the most recent one, I was talking to my mom about religion, and she was talking, well, I mean, now this has actually changed in context slightly, but she was saying, talking about Christianity, I was like, yeah, you know, you used to take us to church, you used to try and take us to church when we were little, because she grew up going to churches. I said, would you consider yourself Christian? Because I feel like you don't really believe it. She's like, no, I just feel like Christians start a lot of wars. And I was like, can you give me an example? And then it just crumbled.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
I was like, which war today? Or, you know, she'll go off on Trump. So many different cases with Trump. Like, oh, how could anyone question in an election? And I was like, I remember you were in tears 4 years earlier than that because Russians on Facebook bringing Trump into office. And now, so like, that was literally the case.
Yes.
Don't bully me. You're just bullying me. I mean, I can't talk to you about this. But so I have to go about it as gently as I just did, literally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's a very intelligent person, the strongest, smartest person I've ever known. But, and so when the strongest, smartest person you've ever known can fall into logical fallacies. It's just, anyway, so just I seeing that around with when your friends and just, when you're just presented that over and over, you're just like, oh, you hold your tongue a lot. And then when you're in the classroom and a student does that very thing, that's just how it comes about. It's like, well, why, what are you basing that on? Do you have any evidence to support that? And that's usually how it goes, like just that question right there. Yeah. Do you base that off? Do you have any evidence? Or some form of question like, well, what about 4 years ago when you were talking about Russians on Facebook? Mm-hmm. With that election, like, wasn't where you mentioned that very argument, isn't that a contradiction?
Yeah. I mean, I specifically remember Hillary Clinton telling Joe Biden not to concede no matter what in 2020, and then almost immediately thereafter, as soon as anybody thought that there might have been a problem with the election, it was, you know, a tantamount to treason, and you couldn't talk about it. You couldn't ask. Mm-hmm. There is definitely a lot of that going on. And, you know, and again, going back to your students, you know, after you have these conversations, have you noticed that they start thinking about things differently in general, or are you having to work with them on a case by case basis to take them through this from their, you know, illogical conclusions to begin with until they've actually begun to think about the problem or whatever it is that they've taken a position on?
No, I think, I mean, we have to keep in mind, though, in that setting in the past, I was not teaching a critical thinking per se class.
Oh, and I'm sorry. That's actually what you're teaching.
Hilarious.
Now? Okay.
No. Well, I'm starting to. I'm starting with an online course that hasn't started yet, but it will be starting. Through a micro school, just on the side, we're hoping to get that going. Teaching a critical thinking class, yeah, and a filmmaking class in conjunction with my other classes that I teach. But in the case of where that video came from, but critical thinking can be applied to, I think, I really do think any curriculum, whether science, English, whatever your history, especially any math, even it's so. So it's not like I'm teaching a critical thinking class, but because it resonates with students and it just naturally comes up, oh, something happened in the news today or yesterday. And it just comes up in conversation. And yes, once like that student in particular in the JK Rowling video, yeah, I did sit down with him recently and talk to him a bit, and he does. But he's a good kid, though. He's very honest and very open to dialogue. So that was just a random, lucky, one in a million thing.
Well, I mean, it's great because at the beginning he's so dead set on the idea that J.K. Rowling is a bigot and a transphobe, and you just disarm him within like three questions, like, you know, and he's like, and I was wondering, you know, how much of it is that he's just, you know, he's a kid, you know, and he's looking to please his teacher, or, you know, has it had a lasting impact? You know, I mean, like, does he now look at other things? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I asked him, I was like, did that genuinely, I was genuinely curious. I was like, given all of everything that's happened, like, that conversation, did that actually, do you really, what are your thoughts on her now? And he was like, no idea. He's like, I definitely did more looking into it after that. And I do feel like, yeah, that was, but again, that age group, they're not dug in as deeply. He genuinely had just assumed that was the case, because why else would all his classmates be saying it?
Right. Totally. Yeah.
It's the same thought process as, on a different level, though, but this, like my mom, for example, because CNN is saying it, and these, why would these people be saying it? Now that's, yeah, something slightly changes when you genuinely start to believe it. When you start thinking that you're fighting injustice or you're fighting for something greater,
right?
That's when the ideology really transforms, as opposed to a misinformed high school student who's just repeating what they'd heard, not necessarily haven't necessarily thought it through that deeply. So they're two different, though I do think you can still apply these techniques to anyone.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying the result might not be as elegant and simple, you know, but yeah, you can still do it.
Well, I mean,
but they usually get defensive.
Well, I was going to say, case in point, you have done a number of videos with someone who I believe is one of your colleagues. I don't know if that's at the high school or at the college, but it's someone who, I mean, they appear to be an adult. They appear to be fairly dug in on their own opinions on a lot of different things. And they also seem to disagree with you on every single point. But it's a conversation you guys keep having on any number of issues. And although you don't seem to change his mind, it does seem like the cracks have begun to show just a little bit.
Yeah, I think I am. Slowly. Yeah, I really think I am. Because he was one of the ones, he was there that day 2 years ago when I was talking to, when the student asked me about socialism, fascism.
Yeah.
And he started giving his explanation on socialism, and it became an interesting little mini debate that I didn't want it to seem like a debate because we were talking in front of a student and everything. Those are the best when it doesn't feel like a debate, but you know what, you can see the move that he's made, you know where it's going to go, and you, and yeah, what's interesting with him is that, because I don't mind, first of all, it's great having someone who can take the heat and they understand the comments that are coming in, and he doesn't care.
They're pretty brutal.
Very secure. Yeah, but he's just like, whatever. And he's like, this is what I think. And I do value that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think I think his mind is changing on a lot of things. Yes, definitely. I'm seeing an effect. But it's important because it doesn't really matter those ideas. It almost doesn't matter whose mouth it's coming out of, because they are ideas that are held by so many people.
Right, right.
You're engaging with the ideas, not the person.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost an avatar. Yes, it is authentic. It is what he genuinely believes. But I could take and switch him out with my friend Chris or my, you know, my mom or so many people that I know. I could just rattle off, like, I know what they're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all like, why go through the trouble? Yeah, it'd be great if I could get to a point where I could have people come in and everything. But first of all, no one wants to come and appear and speak, even if they're not on camera. People are afraid their voices are going to get recognized.
I was going to ask. I mean, it seems like, well, I thought perhaps since you're not showing other people on camera that maybe it might be easier. But I mean, I've noticed that you don't seem to have like a rotating group of people. And I would imagine that, you know, as an educator, you must have a variety from which you could choose, but they're just choosing not to. They're that afraid.
Well, it's, I can't, with the high school, there's legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
not going to invite a bunch of students over to my studio and my downstairs. And also I can't cross the lines with, you know, with the lawyers, what they were saying. Okay. That's fine. That's understandable.
Yeah.
College, possibly I will be able to, but that's why I'm excited about this. It's on WeQuil, this platform that was designed by Sume, this brilliant, who's one of the CEOs of this company. Anyways, you'll be seeing it launched within about a week.
Okay.
And this is going to allow me to actually engage with students on video. That's what I'm most excited about, is that it gives students a place to people that do want to interact more around these ideas mm-hmm. and actually apply the techniques on camera, actually have debates, and then we can share those videos. So it's not going to be, because I'm getting tired of it as well, just me talking to the same person.
Sure.
You know, like, I love him. He's great. You know, but there's only so much rubber on those tires. I feel like he's probably getting burned out as well. Like, yeah. But he's great. You know, like, we mixed it up today with talking about Hollywood. Well, we share a lot of the interests of works. He's a Hollywood fan, not a Hollywood fan, but a camera fan, filmmaker.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You're also a filmmaker. You know, tell me a little bit about your work.
Well, yeah, my background is in filmmaking, and that's what I teach at Emerson. I teach script to screen,
okay.
Traditionally producing, writing, producing in the traditional production model. So that's how I was trained, and I spent some time in Hollywood, about two and a half years, and I got out of there, and I knew that. That's a few years later, I went to grad school. So I graduated undergrad film school, a good film school, and I learned a lot there. In 2013, I graduated, made my first feature. I wrote and produced my first feature. I didn't direct it. So I haven't been on too much directing. I've been toying with directing a little bit, with just these little short films, like my Emerson thesis film about Harvard during World War II. But it's not very cohesive. It's very kind of experimental. It's narrative and with actors, and it looks good, but there's not a clear... My earlier short films are more traditionally written, like Teal, and they're on the YouTube channel if anybody wants to see them. But in the Secret Scholars movie, there's a little short film thing, but that's not really representative of what the story should be. It breaks all the rules, like show, don't tell. It just tells the whole time, because it was me and one person and no money doing this just to put something on YouTube as we're developing, you know, the larger movie that I would like to do. But that gets, anyways, that's my, I'm no interest in Hollywood. I love what the Daily Wire is doing, and I really hope they succeed. And yeah, I would jump at the chance to do any kind of filmmaking like that for sure. But I'm not interested in Hollywood. It's just, yeah.
So did you have any particular negative experiences out there? Something that turned you off from the Hollywood machine? Or is it perhaps the same level of, you know, ideological adhesion that is prevalent there as well?
I'll be honest, it wasn't political at all. It wasn't, maybe it was ideological in a different sense, because I didn't really know about, I never really thought about politics. If you had asked me, I never would have back then. I went to graduate school in 2016, and that's when things changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the beginning of the journey for like a lot of people. I think there was something about that time. So for me, it was experiencing, I realized, okay, this is a rigged game. I see the people who have succeeded and they're miserable. I realize what success looks like here, and I don't want any part of it really deep down. That's not to say, oh, I wouldn't like to be a big director or succeed and make a big movie. I would love that, but I knew what the lifestyle would entail.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen what my classmates who went on into that lifestyle have had to do. I see what's happening now. It's brutal. People are just losing jobs. It's a massive recession. And I just did a video about it today. It's a bubble that is bursting as we speak. Now, I didn't know that was going to happen back then. I didn't know that LA was, I didn't like LA at all. I hated it. I didn't know it was going to get worse. I hope you don't, no offense if you live in LA.
No, I live in Florida, dude, so no.
Okay, I should have
guessed.
But anyways,
Your shirt.
Yeah. Maybe the tan too.
Anyway, that's basically why. I just, the people there stabbing each other. There's so, it's just so much fakeness.
Yeah.
It's, and I knew I didn't want to live in the weather. Anyways. Yeah. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I needed to do something different. I never thought I'd be teaching, you know, like I am. I thought, oh, then later I was like, oh, I could, teaching filmmaking would be really cool because I could still do what I do. And my parents were both professors and they both taught the thing they loved to do. Mom taught jewelry design, metal enamel. My dad taught wood design. He just built stuff in his studio at school all day, every day, just started making guitars, just boom, boom, boom. Like it was just, I was like, that's cool. And they always told me teaching's where it's at. So I was like, oh, just maybe I'll be able to do that. But...
So what was it in 2016 that, that woke you up?
Oh boy. We'll start at the beginning. Okay. When Trump gets elected, that was a wake up because I was like, holy crap. How could so many people that I think are reputable, all of these news outlets, everything I thought, how could they all be so wrong about something?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got my camera and I went downtown to the Boston Common at Emerson that night and filmed. And I have all this footage. I haven't done anything with it. But there was massive protests and marching and chanting. And the footage is, it gives me chills when I watch.
Yeah.
They're because just the chants, I could still hear them. And you would stack that up and they show January 6th and I get it. And they're, but they were chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Donald Trump has got to go. Mm-hmm. How is that not chanting to overturn an election?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I didn't really think about it at the time. I was like, whoa, this feels strange. Okay. Months go by. I start experiencing things at the college. Being told, oh, you can't talk because of the color of your skin. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not allowed to do a project on Winston Churchill because he was racist and an imperialist and blah, blah, blah. And 90%, well, probably 85% of the graduate students were from China, which I thought was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I just observed it. I was just like, okay, I didn't really think much about it. The undergrad, it wasn't like that. Undergrad was like most undergrad you'd see, but I was like, why is the graduate school? Like, what is, why, where are the Australians? Where are the Germans? Where, why this one country?
Right.
There must be some kind of business arrangement. And then we were in a class where I remember it was the first place where first place I had ever had a teacher hand me a book praising Marxism. It was a media studies class. And it was all, and then the conversation went around to, can the government, would it be a good thing for the government to control the internet? Like genuinely as though that might be a good thing. And I was like, I don't know if that's possible. And then there were literally, I kid you, there were maybe two other Americans. The rest were all from China in there. So there were probably eight Chinese students sitting right next to me. And I was like, well, I mean, what do you guys think? Like, how has it worked? Like you've experienced it. Like, how did that go? Do you think it's possible? Because mm-hmm. like you've experienced this firsthand. And the teacher goes, whoa, 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 whoa. No, all right. I was like, isn't this graduate school?
Was the teacher Chinese?
No. The teacher was like your typical, you know, the kind of professor that would teach Marxism. Let's just put it that way. Okay. The vision you have
right.
in your head. And so it's just stuff like that. And that personal experience opens your eyes more than anything. You can mm-hmm. be told things, but you got to live it yourself to really realize it. And slowly that happens. Like my brother went through the same journey through his own experiences. And it wasn't until he went through those himself that he started to realize, like, I wasn't crazy. You know, I would tell people that stat about most of, like, there was multiple classes. I enrolled in a directing class. I went in. I was the only American student. They were all Chinese and speaking Mandarin. And then we were supposed to be working in groups. The whole class was going to be group projects. And there's nothing against Chinese people. It's not that, but they were all speaking another language, and I realized I'm going to have to be working in groups. I don't know any of these. I had been ostracized as well
right.
for some reason because of talking about Churchill and that comment in class, word got around to me that they thought I was like, oh, I tried to do a documentary film project exploring, just talking to students about, well, why did you come to study here from China? And why is it? And I realized it's viewed as such a social
faux pas.
What's the word? It's not, it's a prestige thing for those parents, for their student, for their single child, because the one child law back then,
right,
single child to go study at a certain colleges in the US. So they pushed them to do it. And I was like, well, why Emerson? That was it. That's all the documentary was.
Mm-hmm.
And interviewing them. And anyways, I was kind of ostracized, apparently. That's what word got around to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, Warren, I don't know if this has ever occurred to you, but I mean, there is, I think a lot of people are worried about the idea of a covert infiltration of America, if you will. I mean, have you ever heard of a paper called Unrestricted Warfare? It was written by a couple of Chinese colonels, and it was basically about using the system of the United States to bring down the United States and essentially, you know, elevate China in the global order.
Yeah, I haven't read that paper, but I've heard many people discuss it. Ex-CIA officer,
yes,
I remember on Joe Rogan was talking about it, and it's if I were them, if I wanted to conduct espionage, it's exactly how I would do it. It's exactly the most effective way to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So and one's going to believe it.
No, no. Well, I mean, some people might, but obviously they've got a leg up. I mean, I think this is just me personally, but I mean, I think there is like a socialist takeover of America that is being done at a lot of different levels. I mean, clearly the ideology of the extreme left that is being pushed in so many different ways in society is fundamentally working to change what America is and the things that people believe in an effort to push us towards this more global idea of what the world should be, and at the same time to repress our Republican ways, if you will. And I mean, like, as a republic, you know, remove the ability for us to have representation. You know, instead it's going to be, we're just going to be told what to do. United States will become an authoritarian nation under the control of a larger global organization. And in order to do that, they've got to kill the foundations of what this country was based on, and at the same time kill that, you know, spirit of American ingenuity. And they've done a pretty good job. I mean, I think this is why there's a lot of criticism of the American education system that we have, because that Marxist foundation has been now begun much, much earlier in children through the educational system that they're processed through, so that when they get to a certain point, they're very, very receptive to it. They just accept it as gospel because you've got the mainstream media preaching it to them. You've got so many elements of society and popular culture that's preaching it. And now it's essentially all around us. I feel like we've turned a corner, and I would actually like to get your thoughts on this. But I feel like there is this rejection of that super leftist radical ideology that only just a couple of years ago seemed like it was taking over. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree. I think it's just gone too far.
Yeah.
And luckily it is revealing itself in places where, I mean, I could just looking at my personal, like my brother, for example, the fact that he's awoken to this. And I think YouTube and X platforms like that are incredibly valuable because, yeah, those were in place before that, though. But we have had new thinkers like Jordan Peterson, Brett Weinstein, and who are able to articulate their experiences. Like the horror that Brett went through is just, I wouldn't believe it if there wasn't footage of it. Yeah, I think it just has worn people down in the same way that the movies have. It's just gotten, in the same way that some studio executives, didn't I hear that somewhere, that a recent, someone, one of the studio execs, like, no, we're not doing, like, they cut all the movies that were in development that were pushing.
I think Marvel
certain
did that.
Messages. Was it? Yeah. So yeah, it's like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, enough's enough. Like, we got to make money. It's bankrupt, intellectually bankrupt. There's just no future in it. And hopefully, I mean, I think there's a lot of professors that are feeling this way and they're just, they can't say anything. I think there might, I shouldn't talk about Emerson, but that's what I'll say. I think there's people out there that are frustrated. Yeah. So I think it's going to turn, hopefully.
So have you considered perhaps suggesting like a logic and reasoning class to begin being taught at the high school level? Because, I mean, I took a logic class when I was in undergrad, I mean, over 20 years ago. But, you know, that was like one of my favorite classes, is because we did have so many interesting discussions and it really challenged people in a way that oftentimes would make them uncomfortable. But then by the end of the class, you know, there's a different way to look at things. And again, I think that has really been lost in modern society. People don't often think about why it is they believe the things that they believe. And it's as true for the left as it is for the right. But I just feel like the right is a little bit less prone to do it. Maybe they think about things just a little bit more, oftentimes because they're challenged by the left. And like, we have to we have to rationalize and explain why it is that we believe the things we do. And the left is not so willing to do that. They just get offended and they cry racism or you know, misogyny, patriarchy, et cetera. But would you think that would be a good thing? I mean, obviously, I think that the earlier that we get that influence with a significant amount of pressure onto younger people, then it could keep them open so that when they get out into the world, they remember that and they begin to use it in the way that they interact with everything.
I do think we're on the precipice of an educational revolution in a way, is made possible through technology, through these micro schools. Their numbers, since COVID, their numbers have been skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. Students in these micro schools, basically homeschooling, but using where you're not just limited to reading in your house. It's using technology to connect with teachers through these platforms. Now, and also you connect that with how higher education is changing, where it's less about, because now people hire people to help write essays. There was that scandal when I was at Emerson teaching, my first year teaching, I taught the daughter of
Lori,
who was in the
Full
yes,
House.
Her daughter, my student.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That
I covered that
right,
for sure.
Yes. Yes, it was right before that happened. I taught her, and then like a few months later, that happened. Anyways, my point is that the essays are losing value. The grades are losing value.
Well, look at the plagiarism scandals at like Harvard and such.
Right. So what's the solution to that?
Yeah.
Evidence that can be presented mm-hmm. for the students. So the school that I'm talking about, like these micro schools using video, which is why I'm so excited about this format. Students have a video of them of demonstrating these techniques, engaging in these debates, and that they have a learning portfolio. They have evidence. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, yes, it's not going to be taught at the public school where I'm at. The infrastructure is just too, this is much more feasible. So yeah, I'll be making an announcement within the next week about how we're going to be going about that. But it's a great team we have in place. They're very smart people. They've been doing this for a while, and it's just like the stars kind of lined up. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, that's where it will happen.
Good stuff. You guys, we're going to be opening up the phones here in about 8 minutes or so. Got a couple of comments on Rumble, if I can just go through. And if I can also suggest to you, make sure you get on some alternative platforms, because I think X is a lot safer than it used to be. But YouTube is one of those very dangerous places to lay all of your chips. because I told you before the show, I got banned on Twitter a week before the election. I got banned on YouTube 2 weeks before the election. and then X right after it. But yes, I mean, there's like no warning. They don't allow you to keep your videos or like download them or anything. It's just like you're there 1 minute and then you're gone the next.
Oh.
And it can be devastating if you haven't thought ahead and begun to, you know, prepare to go off other places.
Good point.
Yeah.
I do have a Rumble channel. I just need to be active on it.
That's good. Yeah.
Hopefully hopefully Rumble can take off. I would love to see Rumble take off.
I mean, it has. I mean, it's taken off significantly. You know, I mean, like I started my Rumble channel because I got deleted from YouTube October 15th, 2020. And I had, you know, almost 300,000 subscribers on YouTube. I've got 188,000 now on Rumble. But, you know, I mean, we've got between anywhere from 1 to 5,000 people watching a live stream and then between 50 and 75,000 that watch every single show. And I'm doing 6 shows a week. So really, it's all about, you know, making sure that people know you find your audience. And then there's another one that a couple of my friends started. It's called pilled.net, P-I-L-L-E-D.net. It's like red pilled. And it's a streaming platform, but I mean, they also have the ability to post. It's kind of like Facebook or Twitter in that respect, multiple different ways you use it. And it's a great place. I mean, everybody there is totally based and open to ideas and they want to talk about things. And yes. And so anyways, just as a suggestion, definitely make sure you get set up outside of YouTube. Let me see. Little Nick 73 says, Zach, you never stop working. You have. Hold on. I think I need reading glasses. You guys, this is getting bad. You have brought me from complacency to objectivity, then clarity, and now duty. Flynn behind the scenes documentary was awesome. I love you and Lisa. Love you too, Little Nick. Appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, I had I went live today at 5 o'clock. I normally don't go live at 5 o'clock, but I interviewed General Michael Flynn, and then I had a behind the scenes documentary. I was at the premiere of his documentary, which came out last week and is now playing in 35 cities all across the U.S. And so I put that together and I played both of those, and it was a lot of fun. Freya and the Boys says the schools are and should be our number one battlefront. The indoctrination in all grades and colleges. In the short term, getting Trump back in is the focus. But after that, the schools are a priority. So I would agree with that and like to get your thoughts. I mean, what do you think could or should be done to change the American education system for the better? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of specific ideas that are already well ingrained, and the ideological focus that many educators have all across America, I think would be difficult to step away from. Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen the videos over the last couple of years. I mean, teachers who openly talk about trying to indoctrinate the kids into, you know, whether it's, you know, radical LGBT ideology or, you know, like racial ideology. I mean, talking about what is that one? The 1866 Project or something like that. It was in the New York Times. But yeah, you know, I mean, like, obviously it's great to have a broad focus and to, you know, consider all points of view. But clearly the focus for many of these educators has been to the detriment of, you know, certain classes and races of people here in the United States. And that's antithetical in my mind to what I learned growing up. I mean, I'm 45 years old this year. And when I was a kid, you know, we were taught to be colorblind. I mean, it was about the content of your character. It wasn't about the color of your skin. And I went to a Catholic school. I mean, there was kids of all races there. I mean, we had a lot of Vietnamese refugees and stuff. And I just took it for granted that the United States was the melting pot. And then, you know, here you get into the real world and things are very, very different. So any ideas on how the system needs to change? What can be done?
Yeah. First of all, just get rid of the teachers union. That they have no business existing. Honestly, it's so bad. It's so bad. My first year of teaching, a quick example, first year of teaching about how it just destroys meritocracy. Absolutely. First year of teaching before COVID hits, I'm at a regular public school. That's where that student taking the journalism class wanted to write the article. Okay, COVID hits. Every single first year hire was cut automatically shortly after COVID hit. At the end of that year, we finished the year. but we were all remote by then, regardless of performance, you could have been the best teacher and you would have been cut. It didn't matter. So it eliminates meritocracy. It allows terrible teachers to thrive. There's no, you should not be able to go on strike as a teacher. That'd be the first point. Second point, there should not be, and we should be consistent with this on both sides, there should not be bias in the classroom. So what do we teach? We teach history. We teach core curriculum, though. That doesn't mean you can't push and have experimental conversations and push the bounds of thought in exercise. But there's a difference between that and clear bias and trying to indoctrinate. And that should be called out, but it shouldn't be done at a governmental level. It should be done at a local level or state level. College is different. College, you can push the bounds a bit more. That's where you go to, yes, where we understand, oh, you can take this course and whatever, and this, these crazy topics that you can waste your money and waste your time if you want. That's different than high school, where these students have to be there. We need to allow school choice. It makes no sense. Yeah, it's school choice should be competition. Obviously, I mean, these are just basic concepts
sure.
of economics that I'm sure the audience already agrees with, but for the obvious reasons. But I do think, as I was saying before, though, this new platform for not homeschooling, but it would allow students an alternative, which is the same concept as school choice. Competition leading to alternatives so that schools don't get complacent in the same way that bad teachers protected by a union don't get complacent. Only competition can keep you on your toes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a teacher, like where I'm at right now, I could be fired at any time. And at first, that was a radical thing. And yes, it's not very comfortable, but gosh, what's the alternative? You can't be fired?
You have an incentive to be a good teacher.
To do good. But yeah. It's also it's like the idea that you can't be fired. So anyways, it's just, yeah, no one wants to do that, though, because it's not in your self-interest. But what's doing right is not usually what's doing, it's not what's easy. The right thing is usually not easy.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I'm aware of the teachers union. I'm aware that it offers protection. But I mean, I thought about a teachers union like, you know, police union or the UAW or something like that. I mean, when you say that somebody can't be fired, I mean, a union offers that level of protection. I mean, like you can't screw up. And
I don't mean it like that, because if you do something stupid, yeah, at a public school, it doesn't matter if you're within a union.
Mm-hmm.
If you like get creepy with a kid or something, or you break absolutely. A rule,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're going to get fired. But short of that, that's where bias comes in. If there's no union to protect you, it's like then you can call out, be like, why are you talking about your proclivity for lesbians or whatever? It's like,
right.
There's no need for that. Yes, but that's protected in here. Okay, fine. You're allowed to. Okay, please just don't do it in the future. We know we can't fire you. Blah, blah. You've heard about the exaggerated case of where they have, I forget what they call them, the rooms, where they can't get rid of the teacher. So they basically just put them in an empty room because it's cheaper. It's cheaper just to keep them around. It's not that extreme, I don't think.
There are cases like that. I hadn't heard that, but that's ridiculous.
He's just thrown around where people are claiming that.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you firsthand, tenure does that. I have had teachers at the college level that are so complacent and incompetent. And because tenure literally, it was designed originally, ironically, for thinkers who today would be pushing the bounds of indoctrination that do get. So Eric Weinstein, originally tenure was designed to protect that very mechanism so that Eric could say what he wanted to say and push the bounds without getting fired. It was a system of checks and balances to keep professors to allow free inquiry because that was a sacred thing. But that has changed. So, but now tenure results in teachers where they know there's really they. So they I had a sound design. I shouldn't get into the specifics. He comes in, he just plunks around doing sound design in his lab and everything, and we're all just sitting there. You've got 12 students in the back of the room watching for 3 hours once a week. We're not really learning anything. We're paying a fortune to be there.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing it for 13 years, 15 years. So anyway, tenure does that. Now, at the high school level, I'm sure there are cases, and you could find an extreme case of a teacher that, yeah, they couldn't get rid of them. So they just basically have them working in the cafeteria or in some other position where, because they can't get rid of them. And it's just, but anyways, it's not a good unions in general. I'm just anti-union. It's just no.
Okay, good. S. Cushion says, I am in mental health. I teach rational thinking skills and first principles thinking skills. People really need these skills in our environment. I would agree. Keith O'Higgins says, I think the inflection points to get people's current views, at least on the justice system and law and order, is George Floyd and or Kyle Rittenhouse. Will expose which echo chamber they're in. Certainly will. If you bring up either of those things, then somebody's going to take a certain road for sure, and they'll be very vocal about it. Keith says, I am currently working on a film about a procrastinator's guide to making snuff films. Okay. The working title is Jimmy Carter Hospice. Okay. and we do have a couple of people on the line. Let me go ahead and bring in our first caller. I think this is going to be KC. KC, is that you?
It is.
All right.
Welcome back.
Welcome, Jack, sir. How have you been?
Great, great. Happy post-eclipse.
We made it.
I traveled down to get the full umbrance at Bald Knob Cross. And I was looking for Goat Herder. I couldn't find him. The way he was, selling it, it's like that had to be the place to be. But it was fantastic. It was almost better and best as the one 7 years ago I saw in Paducah, Kentucky. So I'm glad I went down.
Were you able to get any footage of the eclipse or anything to take
absolutely.
Home with you?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Know, I said. I didn't take expensive camera equipment like a lot of people that were there, but the amount of time you could spend looking at it with no glasses, no sunglasses, no whatever, it's magical. It's like I say, a life-changing experience. I mean, even people in like Cleveland or farther north didn't even get that experience because of the clouds. So like I say, it was just a lifetime, achievement celestial, and let's see if it begins the beginning of the end. And I went past a place called Rapture, Indiana, so I figured, hey, you know what? I'm close enough that, hey, they may take me or there may be a weight limit. Anyhow.
So just interesting real quick aside on the eclipse. I heard a tragic story. A woman and her family were driving to someplace in New York to see the eclipse, and the husband was driving the truck. The wife and their adult daughter were riding in an Airstream, and apparently the door wasn't closed properly, and so the mom got up to make sure that the door was shut all the way, and the wind pressure opened the door, and she was pulled out of the Airstream, and she, obviously fell right out
at
maybe 50 miles an hour, and she hit her head and she died. They had just bought this Airstream like a couple of months ago, and she had just retired. Her and her husband were going to travel around the country. One of the most tragic stories that I could possibly imagine. And now it's like it's forever linked to the idea of this eclipse for me. I can't get it out of my head.
Well, and it's like the story about the earthquake in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The one story the main media is going with is the plastic surgery that as soon as the earthquake started, he was in the middle of a breast augmentation.
No way.
So it's like,
I hadn't heard that. Yeah, that's oh man, that's yeah. Sorry for that patient. That's awful. All right, well, yeah. enough of this. Please, what's on your mind, and what do you have for Warren?
Well, Warren, I just love your antithetical take towards the indoctrination institutions that are colleges, and I mean it's bleeding down obviously into the high schools and the grade schools, and it's just, you know, they control the vocabulary. So if they control the meaning of the words and we don't fight back to get back to the origins and we let them change definitions, it's a no-win battle. We really got to be able to use their words against them in so many terms that it's like, it is about facts. It's not about feelings. If you know anything about persuasion, you have to have the three elements of ethos, pathos, and logos to persuade anybody. Two out of three doesn't help. You know, it doesn't count. And the most important one is logos. It's the facts that you have to base your argument on or your debate on. And we've kind of let that go. And, you know, like you say, they control the, you know, vocabulary. So we've got to agree on terms before we can have a civil debate or a civil discussion. So I love the fact that they want to, you know, accuse people and call them deniers. So in the sense of, you know, the Holocaust denier, you know, climate denier, it's really being used as a pejorative. And, you know, when you get into the whole thing about teaching sex in school, you know, they want to use this, well, you know, if you don't believe in trans, you're a trans man. No, I think the people, especially the ones that are going from, you know, men to women into women's sports, they're just penis deniers. So we've got to just use their arguments against them to say, hey, no, you're a penis denier. You can be any gender you want, but you can only be one of three sexes, and that's male, female, and hermaphrodite. So if you want to be, you know, a hermaphrodite wannabe, that's a mental disease because it's not a physical disease. So you've got to be able to take it to them, but you got to do it with kindness. I'm going to kill them with kindness, but you've got to embrace their arguments and amplify them to a point where as soon as you start stretching it out past the logos, you get into the serious mental disorder that they can't back up. So I say in a lot of sense, you know, you've got to be able to stretch out their argument and don't let them say racist, bigot, whatever, to stop the conversation, because, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, obviously. But if you start utilizing their tactics and you get to agree on terms, like I say, that's probably the biggest basis that none of us can agree on terms. And there's just so many dividing topics out there because we've let the mainstream media. And that's just what like Rumble and all these alternative platforms have going is their competition. Their competition for the mainstream media, just like homeschooling is competition for, you know, the schools. And without competition, like the teachers union has no competition. So at that point, yes, that's something like Roe versus Wade. It has to go back to the states, let the states decide, because you can't have a federal education department when not everybody agrees on what the syllabus should be and what's taught. So I'd just like to get your opinion on what, you know, you would do in respect to getting to that basis point where you can discuss it, and, you know, what means would you use? Because I've got a couple answers for, you know, the AI and the cheating in schools, but, you know, that'd like be the tests, you know, I would make all those tests that have to be, or the reports, they have to be handwritten. Okay. No typewriters, no printers, no that, handwritten. And at least that way you get people back into using their hand mind coordination, and they're not just at a keyboard printing it up. It might be easier for the teachers or this, that, or whatever, but it's not about what really matters, which is the student critically thinking. And that's why, you know, pencils have erasers. You know, because we all make mistakes, so we erase it and we, you know, write in the right word. You know, it's not a delete button. You know, the erasers are made for pencils for a reason. And I think we've taken that aspect out of teaching.
Yeah, Warren? That's interesting. It's really about first principles for me. And like you mentioned, figuring out what are those lines that as a nation we can agree upon that we will not cross. So for example, with race, we understand that everyone should be treated the same regardless of the color of their skin. So going to Martin Luther King, judging one on their content of their character. Is what this person is saying to me, does that cross that line? And in many cases, it does. And also what you said about holding them accountable and don't let them get away with doing that. When you see it, call it out. Say, hey, wait a minute. I thought we were not supposed to treat each other differently based on the color of our skin. But you, Professor Norris or whatever, are doing that when you say that that student is supposed to sit silent because of the color of their skin. It just don't let it slide because that's how we get into this position. As far as like the testing one, that's a really interesting one. And I don't know what AI holds, but I do know what you mean about, and if it wasn't AI, again, the wealthy parents who can have people write essays, it's a problem. I think it's more important. What can the student demonstrate? Really at the end of the day, it's what is best for the student. Not all students need to go to college, especially nowadays. College is not the answer that it used to be, and I think that's probably a good thing, and hopefully that will become more and more the case as we get more alternatives. And hopefully some colleges that need to fail will be allowed to fail.
And it's an accreditation game, Warren, in a lot of respects. But I think what the whole school system does, I mean, taking away from obviously this homeschooling, is the teachers, the administration, the public in general, they feed off of shared ignorance. All right. And being specifically vague. All right. It's with like all these terms and allowing them to get into these groups and categories. And like I said, the phrases themselves, it's like the whole BLM movement. All right. It shouldn't have been called BLM. It should have been in that Black Lives Matter. That's a wide, vague phrase for a group. Yes. It should have been BDDM, Black Deaths During Detainment Matter. Because it was about, you know, whether it was, you know, Michael Smith down in, you know, Ferguson, whether it was George Floyd, those are Black deaths during detainment. But when you say just Black Lives Matter, now you throw in all these other interest groups, you get the corporate to get behind it. It's like DEI. That should stand for didn't earn it. All right. But if you allow the ignorance of the populace, just like the electors and everybody in elections, if you allow the ignorance to breathe at a higher rate than people trying to find logic and persuasion, you're at a losing battle every time. So you don't let them infect the body politic, but you don't let them infect the nuclear family, which is ultimately what they want to do. Because I think their ultimate theme is overpopulation. They think there's too many people for the world as it is. It goes back to the population bomb and what was it, the Julian Simons argument, and he won it. All right. There aren't not too many people because people are resources and we're always going to need resources to move forward in any intellectual sphere because we lose smart people every day and the young ones growing up aren't being born with 140 IQs. All right. So we've got to be able to train them by somebody.
Casey, I want to get Warren's thoughts, and then I want to make sure we don't lose these next callers on the line, so we're going to move on after this. But Warren, go ahead. Any comments?
Well, just the last comment I would say is there is something detrimental happening with the statistics where we're seeing for people, 16-year-olds getting their driver's licenses since the 70s. We've never had a rate this low. And beyond that, just a lot of different social factors, social behavior, they're just kind of dropping out of life. And it's very concerning.
Absolutely. All right, Casey, I really appreciate you calling in, buddy. Thank you so much.
Excellent. God bless and have a great night and keep up the good work, Warren.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
God bless, brother. We'll talk to you. All right, next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Make sure you mute the stream in the background. Caller. Caller, that's you. You're on the air. Caller.
I'm here.
Okay, mute the stream. Mute the stream.
Freya, load.
Okay, Freya, welcome back to the show, dude. How you doing?
How'd you know it was Freya?
I could tell from your voice.
Yeah, right. I love this guest.
Isn't he great? Yeah.
Thank you so much, because this is an important point. Our colleges, our schools, the amount of infiltration that has been brought upon amongst these young people. You know, let's look at what they had to go through with the virus. Huh? Mm-hmm. 2 years out of school and college, all those kids being indoctrinated into, you got to get the vaccine, go to college. I mean, this stuff is not going to go away for a long time. That kind of thinking is going to last for another, I don't know, 10, 15 years. It gradually will go away, but faced with such an animal in our colleges and our grade schools, it's really refreshing to see you out there talking about this.
Yeah, Warren, a lot of people are worried about a kind of a lost generation of children, you know? I mean,
it could be like two or three generations.
It could. But, I mean, I'm just talking exclusively right now about those kids that lost a couple of years worth of education. My daughter was in high school when everything shut down. It was near the end of her high school. Obviously it had an impact. I mean, and I think I can only imagine if they were a little bit younger, missing those formative years and only exclusively going through the educational system on a Zoom call. And obviously so many parents found that their children were learning things they were very uncomfortable with. So there are a couple of net positives, I think, to it. But overall, do you feel that it was more detrimental and something that will be long lasting?
Oh, of course. Well, yeah.
When you think about the big picture. So, yeah, there's a lot of individuals that woke up. I think that's the minority. The majority. And then we're talking about the upper echelon of schools. Okay. These are the people that are our future leaders. And they have not reversed their opinion about what has happened. Do you have any comments, sir? Mr. Smith, you have my utmost respect because your courage to come forward and talk about the subject. This has got to be a killer for people's job.
All right. Yeah, Warren, go ahead.
I appreciate that. I think when you do pursue truth and you just good things can happen, and hopefully that is true. I have seen a detrimental toll on students, and I think that's a lot of the contributing factor to the stat we were just talking about, mm-hmm. why so many young people are dropping out of life, not getting their driver's license, not doing the things that we did. And it is concerning. The way I view this is that this stuff will always exist in some form. It has always existed throughout history. It's because it's two different philosophical modes. It's not about politics alone. It's mm-hmm. something deeper than that, which is why it does attack the underpinning of the nuclear family.
Right.
Religion. Why is that? If it were just about a single political agenda or a network of agendas, it wouldn't, and it wouldn't dip its head and then come back years later. We've seen it in various forms. Why is socialism always, why is communism always here and there? And it's always ever present. In the same way, light and dark, good and bad. It's not not that one side were all good and all bad. It's, I'm not trying to claim that, but it's just interesting how the world seems to be made up of two different forces. That this sounds bad. This sounds like I'm construing one as good and evil, but it's just ever present. These forces are just, there's something ever present.
No, there definitely
is. It's not going to entirely go away.
Yeah, no, it seems like there is this kind of pendulum to society. Like, I mean, yes. It swings back and forth from, you know, one extreme to the next, you know, and who is to say it? And well, I mean, obviously, I think everybody has an opinion on it. But I mean, if we're just talking about it in terms of good and evil, you know, obviously, I'm sure there's a concept called the fourth turning. Yeah. Are you familiar with that?
No, what's that?
Oh, well, it's the idea that there is this cyclical nature to society. If you look at American history, we go through these periods of kind of golden years, and then and then they kind of degrade gradually over time. Then things get so bad that we're forced into basically the position to have to take over that society again and then make things good. You know, it's like hard times.
Hard men.
Yes. Hard times, hard men.
I got you.
But there's an excellent book. I think you'd like it. And it goes through history in America. And it's like there's this 70-year cycle or so. And it really lines up. And, you know, if we're going by that timeline, then we're basically at the darkest point right now before things swing that pendulum in another direction and they get better. All right. Freya, thank you very much, buddy.
Real quick, the last thing I would say about the pendulum, it can go either – too far in either direction.
Absolutely.
So it's not just saying good and evil, right?
Yeah.
Either side can go evil.
It's true. So yeah. Well, you know, the thing about what do they say? Fascism and communism, you know, if you go far enough to the left or the right, they meet up in the middle. And then you've got something that's indistinguishable from the other. Clearly we don't want either of that to happen here. All right. Let's bring in MAGA Girl 73. All right, MAGA Girl 73, you're on the air and your camera's on. I just want to make sure you're aware of that. Your audio is about to connect and your audio is connected. Just want to make sure you know your camera's on. And if you want to be on camera, that's totally cool. But if not, you can just keep pointing at the ceiling. Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, we are. Yes, MAGA Girl, what's going on?
Yep, so soon. No, I was just going to share a funny story with you, something like kind of lighthearted.
Please.
Earlier when you were talking, you know, just talking about growing up and how you were raised and stuff like that. I remember being in high school. I graduated in 1991. Mm-hmm. I remember not paying any attention to politics. In 1988, it was the Bush-Dukakis election, and we were in a friend's basement. We played poker on the weekends, smoked a little stuff, had some drinks. And I remember saying, why can't someone just get up there and just be real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just get up there and be like, hey, you know what? Here's what's going on in the world. Let's fix it. And every time I see Trump talk, it takes me back to that day when I said that. And everybody looked at me like I was crazy. And that's kind of what's happening now.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I do have a question about when I watched your documentary, which was awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Really awesome. And Ivan was talking, and he was at the end of it, he was talking about the pre-electoral, you know, about if the states would do their pre-electoral.
Yes.
Exactly. And I am still getting my feet wet with all this, but I'm in. So I want to know, like, what positions in my, is it my state Congress or my, you know, the U.S. Congress that I need to get a hold of to say, hey, you need to the electoral.
So I think that what Ivan was referring to would have had to do with the U.S. House. So that would be the U.S. House of Representatives. Of course, in your own state, you're probably going to have like your own state assembly, and you're certainly going to have, you know, state senators as well. I'm not 100% on exactly what direction to tell you to go on that. But I can tell you that I'll be happy to do another show with Ivan and ask him to explicitly state whatever it was that he was getting to right there, so that we can send people out with a directive and a bit of an action item list, and we can get some clarification for sure.
That would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
I sound like we have a lot of time. Like,
no.
We have to get on this.
Yeah, it's definitely do or die. We're in the 11th hour right now.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm not going to keep you. Thank you so much for all you do, Zach. I love you. As soon as I started listening to you, I was like, this guy, you know, your research, as you say. And I do my research, and I usually come right back to you because you know what you're talking about.
So. Thank you so much. That's very kind of you. I really appreciate it.
All right. You have a great night.
All right. You too. God bless. We'll see you. Okay. Next caller. This is Norden Light 24. All right. And real quick, let me just give a couple of quick thank yous over here on Pill. Thank you to Sean Joe, Michelle Ann, and Good Work Girl, as well as Raisin Kane. Thank you, guys. All right. We're waiting for Norden Light 24's audio to connect. So in the meantime, thank you to Sean Joe. He says, Biden for giving financial aid is to keep kids signing up for school. It is an indoctrination tool. All right. And Warren, I wanted to get your thoughts on that very subject. But Norden Light just disconnected. All right. Norden Light, hopefully you can call back in and we'll get you to ask your question or give your comment to Warren. So, you know, as somebody who went to grad school, I've got plenty of student loans that I have been diligently paying off for a long time. I am not among the group of people who have received student loan forgiveness. I'm glad about that. I don't want that. I took on the burden of student loans because I intended to pay them off. But have you found that students are looking at that as a possible reason that they might actually support Joe Biden or the Democrat agenda? Or are they simply just looking to take advantage of it and then do whatever it is they would otherwise do?
Yeah, I don't think they're specifically backing him for that issue alone. I'm sure it's great for them. They're all just like, oh yeah, of course. Like, who doesn't want, you know,
free money.
So, but I think it's part of a bigger picture.
So, I mean, do you have students that can easily Norden Light, are you there?
Yeah, I wasn't trying to say anything.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine. It was your turn. It was your turn to talk. The reason I started talking was because I thought we lost you. Okay. Well, good to know that you're here. You are on the line. Yeah. You can go ahead and ask your question of Warren or make your comment.
I'm sorry. I was just here to view. I didn't know the girl posted the link. I'm totally sorry. It's my first time doing this.
Well, no, it's fine. It's fine. But since you're here, you might as well make some commentary for us. I mean, are you enjoying the show?
Of course I'm enjoying the show. I'm just picking up. I didn't even know who Warren is, honestly. Okay. I'm just trying to listen. I enjoy the subject.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah, I'm just a passerby, man.
All right.
Sorry. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's no problem. Listen, I encourage you to head to the description of the video, whether you're on Pilled or Rumble, any of the platforms. In the description is a link to Warren's YouTube channel. He's got some great videos, interesting conversations, and gives me a lot of hope for the future of America. Yeah, you can also get to his Twitter as well, and he's a good follow.
Okay. Yeah, I did pop over to YouTube. But
okay. All right.
I don't spend much time there, but yeah.
It's no problem. You can see all of his videos on X too. So.
Thanks, buddy. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah, okay. No problem. All right. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, man.
Yeah. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
All right. Yeah. Not a problem. I'm not upset or anything, but just if you guys do click that Zoom link, it'll bring you into the waiting room and then I'll bring you into the call and you can feel free to ask Warren any questions or make any commentary at all. Warren, are you a father? I mean, is this something that, you know, resonates with you personally as it does with me and I think many other people in the audience?
Yeah, I'm not right now. No, I'm not.
but right. probably soon.
Okay, well, good for soon you. Hopefully, congratulations in the near future. That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, it matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get it.
So what do you think the course is for America? I mean, in terms of the education system and what it looks like right now, I mean, what is your ultimate prediction? I mean, where this is going to go?
I think the things that will implode, that need to implode, will implode. You and I were talking a bit about Hollywood. I think that's in the midst of imploding.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is a bubble, that's the beauty. I do think Churchill was right when he said that democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. I think our founding fathers were right when they laid this out. They did so in a very ingenious manner, anticipating times such as these. And I think we will get through it because of the framework is there. And that's the beauty of the competitive marketplace. Bubbles will pop that need to pop. Competition will occur. We'll see what happens, but we'll have more Daily Wires, those like them, and similar things in the educational space. I do think we're on the cusp of a big change in education. So I'm optimistic politically. Obviously, we know no one can really predict it, and it could go, who knows?
Yeah.
But talking about the bigger things, the deeper patterns, yeah, I think we have the greatest country, and it's built upon a foundation that will outlive any of this insanity.
I agree with you. I think a lot of the times when we're talking about the state of America, the direction that we're going, a lot of people are very fatalistic about it. You know, I mean, there's people often say that, you know, if we don't fix it this time, then America's done. And I certainly agree that the situation is dire. But I also believe that America is stronger than, you know, any one election cycle. Even if things go in a spectacularly bad direction, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to stay bad forever. And I personally am of the opinion that the pain, the sort of, you know, the growing pains that America is going through right now are going to likely result in more pain before it gets completely fixed. And even once it's fixed, once we, you know, and objectively, what does that mean? You know, obviously, I know that I'm really hoping that they don't steal the election again. I'm hoping that, you know, we're going to, you know, be in a position within government and our relative power to unravel some of this Gordian knot that it seems America has been caught up in. But, you know, what does it mean to fix the country? I mean, I think everybody has a different idea about what that truly means. And the problems that we're talking about have been decades in the making. I mean, this is I often say that this is a generational fight, you know, I mean, perhaps multi-generational, you know, because in order for us to successfully re-indoctrinate America to care about the country or to care about family, to have faith, to think about things from a different perspective, it's a daunting task. And I really feel that, you know, as you said earlier, you know, the mask is kind of ripped off. The scales have fallen from people's eyes, and they are seeing things for what they are, closer to what they are. But have we reached a critical mass? I mean, how many people will it require to demand change and a restoration of this nation before it actually happens?
I mean, that's a question that obviously I can't answer that, but I can. Yes. But it's crazy how many people are dying today from what's coming across the border and mm-hmm. what's happening here and suicide. And it is a dark time. And what you said is poignant. And I've had times where I've felt so frustrated and shaking my fist at, oh, the damn 60s, and looking at my parents' generation, I blame them sometimes. And that can be easy to do. Mm-hmm. So I try not to, but it can be where I'm just, it's like, how could you, like, but that's not necessarily fair to them, but it's true, though, that there was a cultural shift that mm-hmm. came about in the pursuit of bliss. And things have, that has echoed through to today. Man, if things get really bad, though, if there is another world war, I don't know how this generation would do it. I mean, both my grandfathers were in World War II.
Yes, me too.
And I strive to, you never know. I don't know what would have, how I would have been able to, I don't know. I would like to think I would have tried, but it's, yeah, I don't know. I think we'll make it through though, but it could be bad. It's,
well, I mean, from a purely tactical perspective, I'd say that our military, all of our branches of the military are in a uniquely disadvantaged position. So based upon the fighting forces and even the weaponry that we have right now, I don't know how we could possibly fare if there truly was a global conflict. And then even more than that, people are not feeling the same call to serve in the way that they did with World War II. My grandfather, my dad's dad, you know, he was in World War II. He was injured on the battlefield. You know, I mean, it was just like, you know, second nature. I mean, it was a noble war, right? You know, I mean, like there was a real need, the entire world fighting against, you know, fighting against fascism, fighting against Hitler. You know, I mean, it was like, how could you not do it? Everybody was down for it, you know, and then that slowly kind of veered off a little bit. The idea of the wars that America was getting involved in became less and less noble. And now, you know, after having lived through a number of conflicts in my lifetime, I mean, it seemed to be all about profit motives. You know, I mean, like, it's not really about any sort of noble ideals. It's about the perpetuation of the military-industrial complex, and people don't want to fight for that. You know, I mean, you're not really fighting for America. You're fighting for Raytheon, or you're fighting for Lear, or whoever it might be, and or you're fighting for some global order that many of us don't want to be any part of. You know, I mean, the conflict in Eastern Europe, I personally feel, has nothing to do with America. And I don't know if you saw the interview that Tucker Carlson did with Putin, but I thought that was brilliant. And to hear that history lesson from Vladimir Putin, yeah, I mean, he went back 1,000 years, you know, describing what the whole thing was about. And I don't think that many people, I certainly didn't, you know, I knew about the color revolution in Ukraine. I knew about Victoria Nuland and NATO intervention and the CIA. I mean, I knew about all of this recent stuff, but I certainly did not know about that deep history that the Russian people are thinking about on a regular basis, or that the Ukrainian people are thinking about. I mean, it all seems to be very immediate, but it was so far back. I mean, it just, you know, it gave a totally new perspective on it. And
yeah. And I gotta watch that.
Oh my gosh! I
watched
think you,
parts of it, but yeah. I didn't. The history lesson part, like you said, it's so long. I need to sit down and watch the whole thing.
I streamed it here on the channel. Like, I'm really glad I did, because it was eye opening. You know, I mean, like, I already had my mind made up on, you know, how I felt about the conflict, but it just gave a new dimension to it. I think you'd enjoy it. Okay. All right. Yes. We've actually got four people on the line now, so I'm going to bring in our first caller, which is Freedom Machines. Mr. Amazing, can you hear me? Freedom Machines, are you there?
Hey there. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I've got you, sir. Good to hear from you. How you doing?
Hey, man. Always doing good.
Excellent.
Congratulations, by the way, on nailing down an interview with General Flynn. That's totally badass.
Thank you so much. That was actually the second interview with General Flynn in the last 2 weeks.
Well, I caught the first one. I didn't even know you had a second one. That's how out of the loop I've been.
Yeah. I did another one today, just earlier today. So definitely check it out. But either way, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You guys are firing in all cylinders and just hitting every nail on the head right now with everything that you're saying. One of the things I think that the leftists need to really understand is this infiltration is all about divide and conquer. And these things like racism and, you know, the thousand different genders and all that stuff they're trying to do. All of that is simply to force wedges in between people.
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't realize is it's divide and conquer. They're still part of the conquered people, mm-hmm. right? Like, they don't understand that they're like, take a giant ship and have people setting fires and drilling holes below the waterline. They don't understand that they're on the same boat that's going down. They're just trying to sabotage part of the people. And that's what's happening to this country. Like, they don't understand that they're being used as pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it. Like, it's easy to knee jerk and get angry and call them stupid and names and all that stuff. But it's almost, I don't want to sound offensive, but they're always offended by everything. But you got to treat them like very young children. They don't understand that they are actually being fooled by a lot of this stuff. But the thing is, we have to, the fact that many of these things didn't get addressed and stopped, and we were being quote unquote tolerant in the past, that's what led to litter boxes in bathrooms that janitors have to clean because there's children saying that they're cats in schools now.
Mm-hmm. So, Warren, I think that there's this kind of prevailing idea that the oppressed need to become the oppressors. And it's really interesting to hear people rail against the idea of, you know, racism or supremacy of any type, but then also actively engaging in the same type of behavior. And I think that Freedom Machines is right. You know, they are being used as pawns. And what they don't realize is that, you know, if they are to conquer any one group, then the true puppet masters are then just going to basically do the same thing to them. It's like, you know, you go back to the Maoist revolution, and they killed the intelligentsia first. They killed the thought leaders, and then once the thought leaders were gone, well, then they had to kill the engineers. Once the engineers were gone, then they had to kill the teachers, and then once the teachers are gone, they got to kill the janitors. You know, I mean, they just successively went on down the line. But any thoughts?
I mean, with postmodernism, we see that the world through their eyes is just power. It just comes down to power dynamics, whether it's feminism, power of men over women in their eyes. That's all there is. And power is just tyranny through them rather than competency. And competency is something to be shied away from or discouraged in the same way masculinity is to be discouraged. So it's just a tale. It's baked within that pattern we're seeing, that psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right that they all, many of them, I can understand the nobility of their intentions, and they feel like they are fighting something. They feel like they're standing up for an oppressed class. But it's coming from a place of emotion, which mm-hmm. is why critical thinking and logic is so important.
Absolutely.
All there right. you go. It's way easier to have people react on heavy emotions than out of their logic. And we have to realize how good they are at this. They're not stupid. The Democratic Party that fought to keep slavery legal also fought against the civil rights in the 50s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Then whenever they realized that they were going to lose the black vote, they said, well, we might as well have them voting Democrat the next 200 years, and just started the whole welfare program. And now they're so corrupted that people are leaving the Democratic Party, and they see what's happening with the puppet Biden and Trump. And now they're, black people fought and died to get the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, all passed because of Republican support.
Mm-hmm.
The first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, who freed the slaves, they are now voting Democrat. But since they're coming over, they're bringing in the illegal aliens so that they can inflate the census numbers to make more essentially votes for themselves. They care so much about power that the people who died to earn the right to vote don't matter to them, and they're bringing illegal aliens in, as well as that's part of a foreign invasion. I'm going to be honest with you. That is straight up treason. They're using our money to fund a foreign invasion into our own country. The whole reason for the federal government is for our sovereignty and our security, and they're violating it at its core.
Yes.
They need to be dragged into the street, flogged, tarred and feathered, and the rest, highest punishment for treason. That's my personal opinion on what these politicians are doing to the country right now. But I'm going off on a tangent. I could do this for 5,000 hours. Absolutely love you. You guys have a blessed evening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rock and roll.
All right,
have a good evening.
You too. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. So yes, you know, I mean, as horrific as the idea of an invasion of illegal military aged men is, it has had an impact. And I mean, you've got this whole walk away movement from the Democratic Party. You've got traditionally solid Democrat base votes that are now witnessing this invasion, and they've seen how that puppet master class has kind of traded one group of people for another. And the illegals are now being given all these special statuses, and they're being given all of this public assistance, and it's taking away from American citizens in a really significant way, and forcing them to reevaluate their lot in life and who does they're supporting. Are you in your area seeing any particular influence of this migration of people and the effect it's having?
What was it? Didn't they bring a large group to Martha's Vineyard at some point?
They certainly did.
I'm pretty close to there. So yeah, in Massachusetts, it's not too much visible here. It's all kept, high taxes and everything. That's the downside of it. But Massachusetts, but yes, near Martha's Vineyard, but in North Carolina, where I am from, sometimes I see some things, but
yeah. In Boston specifically, I had heard that the state government was soliciting homeowners to house groups of people.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that myself. I haven't been contacted by them, but I have heard that.
Good. Oh man. What scares me the most in thinking about people allowing that to happen. I mean, you see what's going on with squatters. I mean, just taking over people's homes. I mean, if you get the wrong group of people that you don't know and you don't have any background on moving into your home, what's to say that they're not just going to change the locks when you go to work and then write up a contract saying that you gave them the house? I mean, depending on where you are, it may be very difficult to get your property back. And, who knows what kind of status it's going to be when you get it. I mean, is all of your stuff going to be there? Is it still going to be livable? I don't know. Lots of what ifs.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. We've got DJ Vector coming in next. Just so you know, Warren, Vector is our Australian correspondent. And here we go. Vector, you're on the air, buddy. Go ahead and unmute. Let me ask you to unmute. There you go.
Hello, Zach.
Hello, Vector. How are you?
I'm absolutely sensational, brother. If I was any better, I mean, I'd be dangerous. So there's that. Hello to Warren. It's a pleasure to meet you. It's a very fascinating show. I don't really know what I was calling it to say, ladies and gents. I suppose I'll have a couple of questions for Warren, but before I start, Zach, I do have to congratulate you for such a stunning year that you are having, 2024. Flynn, Ivan Racklin, Clay Clark, Colonel McGregor, it goes on and on. I can't wait to see whatever you've got going for the rest of the year. I'm sure that it's big. I'm calling it. I would like to see Zach at Mar-a-Lago. I've said this before many times, interviewing President Trump and the First Lady Melania Trump at Mar-a-Lago, representing us, Anons and Autis. We're all coming, ladies and gents. It's all unraveling. Granddad's cardigan. I'm telling you now, like, these people are on borrowed time. There's nothing that they can do now. I'm getting really, really excited. This is the best day for me, ladies and gents. It's been a fucking amazing, since Hillary lost in 2016. That's how excited I am. I'm literally that excited. And that was the most amazing fucking documentary, Zach, that you did. And I can't wait to come and help you. I can't believe that you've got all the same interests as me. You got all this camera equipment. I do too. I've just bought a studio. So I'm ready to go, bro. When I get my dumb ass over there, I'm telling you now, I'm going to crisscross the country with you and we're going to go and talk to fucking everybody, bro. I'm right so on. Excited. I'm sorry about the F-bombs, but yeah, okay. You have to realize just how much of a big deal this is for everybody in the community at the moment. You pierce through the veil here, like everyone's paying attention. I'm 100% certain that President Trump is watching your show. Like, has to be. If General Flynn's on there and Ivan Racklin, by the way, big shout out to Ivan. This guy's like, can't wait. Yeah, absolutely. Really excited. Spoke to him. Now, what can I say about to Warren? Warren, why is everybody that's being educated now like not so dumb, but they're just so uninformed and their grammar is terrible. Good grammar is very important for me. It's what separates us from the animals, you know, like a good education, at least, you know, take the time to speak, you know, clearly and with respect with other people and just the whole how we used to cherish the thoughts of Martin Luther King, how, you know, we would judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And, you know, how we all bleed the same red blood of patriots as soldiers know when we go to war. How are young people not understanding this? Like, are they so naive to think that because they've never seen a war, that this is like the reality? I think that they're going to get drafted and we're going to be in a really big wake up call situation for Generation Z. And even millennials, my son is 17 and 6'7", probably 120 kilograms. He's huge. Mm-hmm. He wants to join the Air Force. My daughter is third in the state for academics, if that makes sense. Like, it's called ACAT here. Like, and, you know, she's a genius. She's just become, she's just studying to do journalism. They're all so lefty, liberal thinking. I don't know how to say them, Zach and Warren. I don't know what to say to them. No matter what, you know, my daughter thought that Joe Biden was the best thing since sliced bread when he won the election, won in, you know, air quotes, obviously 81 right. million real votes. Can't be wrong. But I digress. Look, and doing victory laps. And I'm like, listen, you don't know what you're talking about. It's a big job.
Vector, are you still there?
No, talking about, they don't even know. Like, come on, man. Am I right. still on?
We were losing you. So let's get Warren's thoughts on this because we've got two more callers. I want to make sure we get to them before the end of the show. But yes, Warren, any thoughts?
Yeah, man, I think it comes down to stepping outside of your comfort zone, and students don't really have to do that as much now. Mental health is taking a more prominent feature in their lives. They're encouraged to seek out mental health counseling. It's normalized. Having anxiety, it's almost worn as a badge of honor, and that's kind of built within into the very framework itself within education, where these difficult conversations aren't allowed to occur or encouraged often cases, and that it requires stepping outside your comfort zone. And that's where you learn to think and speak outside of your comfort zone. If you don't step outside and do what's easy versus what's difficult, what's meaningful, two different. The right thing is not the easy thing. And that's something I've noticed with students, just this mental health increase awareness and that. It's just, I don't think it's a very good thing.
That's interesting.
They're all on the drugs too, bro, aren't they, Zach? Like, a lot of these kids are sick of the SSRIs. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Go ahead, bro.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, there has been a real focus placed on pharmaceutical intervention rather than, you know, actual work on yourself or, you know, trying to overcome whatever your issues might be. But Warren, I had never considered that maybe the attention placed on mental health would have a negative impact in that way. You know, I mean, I suppose that if people are kind of leaning on that as a crutch, it's almost like a disincentive to step outside of that comfort. Like, you've got that note from your psychiatrist, and you've also got to make sure that you're taking your Adderall at the same time every day. So, you know, you're going to be focused on that rather than just trying to be the best person that you can be. And I would also imagine that there is probably a focus for the educators to be as – to use kid gloves with everybody because, you know, you don't want to step on anybody's mental health awareness or, you know, somehow find yourself on the wrong end of a call from a set of parents or something like that. Or worse yet, being called into the superintendent's office because you were not sensitive enough to somebody's needs or what they how they want you to act.
Yes. Like, how are you going to teach World War II? Or it really in a visceral way, or to really try and communicate. So perhaps we're going to watch a scene from Saving Private Ryan or do something outside the box to actually try and get these students to understand the magnitude of what our forefathers actually went through.
Right.
Your grandfather, or my grandfather, like what, how are they going to experience that if they are worried about trigger warnings or being uncomfortable? Because that's going to be uncomfortable.
Wow, I never even thought about Saving Private Ryan being a triggering factor for a bunch of 16-year-olds. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, I can only assume you're saying that because there's probably a real world example of that happening. But
yeah, I tried that.
Wow.
I should,
yeah. Wow,
they were fine with it. It's the adults that
really.
Yeah.
Jeez, oh Pete. All right. So yes, when I said it was a generational thing earlier, it's multi-generational clearly. All right. Well, listen, Vector, we got to jump onto the final callers, buddy, but I really appreciate you. And yes, I am looking forward to interviewing people from a U.S. Aussie perspective, and we'll get a whole bunch of awesome footage.
We're going to have so much fun, bro, believe me. Yes. And thank you, Warren. Warren, I respect your filmmaking and what you're doing. I've had to teach myself over the last, 18 months about cinematography. I'm trying to obviously film my cooking show and doing it all live as well. So I've got to give you much respect. It's extremely technical. And I think some of the smartest people are actually making films out there. So I think also being able to tell the story is the hard part. And that's the part that I'm trying to learn. So hopefully we can tell this story of basically the redemption of the United States and all the rest of us, because this is a fight really worth doing. And I'm so proud, and it's so privileged for me to be a part of it. Thank you very much, Zach and Warren, and your audience. And I love you. Make America great again.
You don't need to put all of that product in your hair. You just don't.
All right, let's go, Brandon.
All right, brother. Much love, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace. Okay, we're going to take these final two callers, and then we're going to go ahead and call it. And I really appreciate Warren spending time with us tonight. Caller, you're on the air. Make sure that you mute the stream. Caller, can you hear me? Phone number 541. Okay. Well, caller, I'm going to go ahead and mute you because your stream is going, and we're going to take this last caller. Caller,
you, and then we're going to go ahead and call it. And I really
okay.
Hello.
Hey, please mute your stream.
Hold on. I'm getting there. There we go. Finally. Hey, Zach, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Last time, I don't know, the gentleman you had on and I clashed because, like I said, I've seen it many times before. But I, as a result, kind of knocked Ida, who my friend I wanted to bring on. So I want to let her to give her opinion. I think you'd be smart to ask her some good questions because we do a lot of this law work. The case we're working on right now is pretty heavy duty. Ida? Zach Ida, you there?
Hello, Zach.
Hi, Ida. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are all you guys?
Excellent.
Good.
So, yeah, go ahead. Did you have a question or comment for Warren?
Not specifically. I was actually going to comment on the unanimous declaration of 13 United States that your guest at the time kind of dissed off and just blew it off like it was nothing.
Okay.
And well, I think that's the key.
Well, I was
that is the key to everything we're dealing with.
Okay, I hear you. I guess since it's 11 o'clock, I would suggest, and it's also not the subject for Warren, but I would suggest that you send me an email at redpill78@proton.me, I'm more than happy to talk about this at another time. Or, you know, if you were to call in earlier in a show, and we can definitely go there, I would definitely think that that's totally fine.
Okay.
No worries. All right.
Zach?
Yeah?
Zach? Real quick, I think what is missing, it is definitely at the foundation of this conversation. In fact, all conversation the whole night. Here's why. The unanimous declaration is the founding document, which is a trust. And as a trust, everything that comes after it, including the Constitution, is subject to it. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Have a blessed night.
All right. God bless you. Thank you so much, you guys. We'll see you. All right. And let me just go ahead and finalize the comments from over on Pilled. Thank you very much to Michelle Ann, who says we need to show Zach some love. Well, thank you very much for that. Thank you to Sean Joe and Good Work Gal. Thank you to Porpoiseful and Sean Joe. Sean Joe says the government wants to keep giving loans to the colleges. For the leftist indoctrination for the government. And then Slug Trail, thank you very much. Yes, Warren, I mean, there's a direct correlation between the funding of education and the increased cost of tuition at colleges all around the country. And it seems like so many things in a modern society to be a very well-oiled grift. They know that they can soak up as much money from the federal government as possible, and so they take advantage of that. And that's obviously to the detriment of students and then the greater economy at large.
Yeah, and that's what makes me question the affiliations with China, why they're doing business on such a scale. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
But it is it's alarming. It's one of the only products I could think of where the value is decreasing, but the cost is increasing.
Yeah.
Continuously. And so, again, we mentioned the bubble. Hopefully that's a bubble that will burst. The only way to reverse that is through competition and alternatives. But I don't think the government should be involved in this at all.
No, me either. Okay, so one final question before I get your final thoughts. The online educational institute that you were referring to, is that specifically geared towards like school age kids, high school kids, college? I mean, is it some sort of fusion of all of them? I mean, is it an accredited institution?
It's a micro school platform. It's a technological platform that allows micro schools. It's a social media platform, actually.
Okay.
So it correlates to all these. You can check it out. Weekwill. I'll make a formal announcement over the next week about this. They're probably watching this now, but it's a great group. You don't have to be a high school student. It is designed for students that are homeschooling to create the visual evidence portfolios that they mm-hmm. can submit. Mm-hmm. So, but anyone, if you do want to, there's ways to just participate. You don't even have to. You can't just spectate. You don't even have to get on camera and engage in the debates if you're just interested in critical thinking or you're a debate nerd or you just – so there's different – we'll be launching what that's going to look like. So if that answers it. But it's going to be cool. You can search it Weequill, Wequll.
Weequill.
So that's the platform. Yeah. It's a new technology that they've been doing it for a little bit. I just met up a few weeks ago and we've been developing this. It's a great group though.
Awesome. Okay.
Smart people.
All right. Well, at the end of the show, I always like to ask my guests what you would really like the audience to take away from the conversation tonight. What would you like to leave them with?
Like what we were talking about, that this is not going to ever go away completely, but to trust in the brilliance of those who came before us. And for those of you that do believe in something larger, you're very fortunate. And I do as well. And hold on to that. Don't feel like that needs to be forced on anyone. And let that bring you peace. And to avoid the ego, because the ego is what leads to this emotional conviction from either side. And that's why you see these people making these broad declarations and taking these presuppositions. It just comes from a place of ego. So detach from that, but understand your reason above all, like what, not just your goal. So if I'm debating that student, J.K. Rowling, not just what am I trying to do, but why? Because that's the why, that's bigger than J.K. Rowling. It's bigger than anything. And that's what's going to help us, I think.
All right. Excellent. And tell everyone once more where they can find you. And if you want to give out any contact information, you're welcome to do that.
Yeah. My Twitter or X platform, WTSmith17. Find me on YouTube, Warren Smith Secret Scholar Society. And I'm on Rumble. I probably just search Secret Scholar Society on Rumble.
Okay.
But yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. Awesome. I appreciate great, you man. Being
Thank
here.
You.
Yeah, no problem. I had a great time talking with you. Everybody at home, I will obviously be back tomorrow night at 9 p.m. If you missed any of the specific details that Warren gave out, again, you can go to the description of this video. If you're listening to the audio podcast at a later date, you can also go to the description, and Warren's credentials, his YouTube and his X will be right there. And Warren, I hope to have you back again sometime in the future. If you've got anything you want to talk about, you just let me know. Everybody at home, thank you for being here. Good luck and God bless. We'll see you tomorrow.